Sup, you beautiful bastards. You're watching the Philip DeFranco Show. It's a muggy Tuesday. This is your second of four road shows this week. I just got done driving for 8 hours with two small children in the car, and it actually went surprisingly well. But unfortunately, that's kind of the only good news today, and we got a lot of news to talk about today. So buckle up, hit that like button to let YouTube know that you like these big daily dives into the news, and let's jump into it. Late last night, one of the craziest, most horrific things was caught on video. A 948-foot cargo ship rammed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Right, it's one of the city's major bridges over the Patapsco River used for Interstate 695. And this collision caused the bridge's near total collapse. Now, the authorities are still trying to figure out exactly what happened here. But one of the first questions was whether this was an attack of some kind. And you even had the likes of Andrew Tate outright claiming as much on X, saying the ship, quote, deliberately steers towards the bridge supports. Foreign agents of the USA attack digital infrastructures. Nothing is safe. Black Swan event imminent. But with that, you have the FBI and other officials saying that based on the current information, it's clear to them that it wasn't tied to terrorism or even intentional. Instead, it's believed that the boat was struggling with its power right before the collision with the support beam. And experts are also pretty confident that this wasn't a case of a single person failing and causing the accident by steering poorly or something. Or these cargo ships have fairly large crews, and there's always someone ready to take over in the case of an emergency. Also with this, you had rescue workers arriving on scene at around 2 a.m. They quickly started looking for people. And as of filming, numbers right now are hard to find, as officials are being pretty tight-lipped. But we do know that at the very least, the crew of the ship is fine. We've also learned that at least two people were pulled out of the water alive, but still officials fear that this could be a mass casualty event. Or they know at least some cars fell into the river, and that in addition to many workers on the bridge because road crews were doing maintenance when the accident happened, we do know that at least seven are missing. It's also not an easy rescue effort by any means. Or the channel is between 40 and 50 feet deep, and it is a very strong current, so you can't exactly just dive in without much issue. We've also seen Maryland's governor issuing a state of emergency and saying, we are thankful for the brave men and women who are carrying out efforts to rescue those involved and pray for everyone's safety. Meanwhile, the company behind the vessel, Maersk, they're likely going to have to answer a lot of questions about what happened, especially because this exact ship was involved in an accident back in 2016 in Belgium, with that time it running into and heavily damaging a key alongside its hull. And as far as what happens from here, it's likely going to be years for cleanup efforts and rebuilding efforts to finalize and cost tens of billions of dollars in just direct costs. Like, that's not even considering the indirect ones, like how this affects the port in Baltimore, which is the nation's ninth biggest. And so far, as of recording, at least 10 ships have been forced to drop anchor and wait, and that number is likely just going to rise. So at this point, it feels like the most we can hope for is that the number of casualties is relatively low, just considering what a massive collapse this was. But for now, we'll have to wait and see what else comes out, what we learn, as well as what this long road ahead looks like.
And then,
oh, P. Diddy just got the Trump Mar-a-Lago treatment, with Homeland Security agents and other law enforcement swarming his two homes in Miami and L.A. yesterday. They had helicopters buzzing overhead. You can see them escorting two men out of the L.A. property in handcuffs, with some outlets reporting that they appear to be Diddy's sons, Justin and Christian King Combs. And for a while, everyone was asking the big question of, well, where is Diddy himself? With some speculating that he may have actually fled the country, according to flight tracker data showing his private jet flew from California to the Caribbean, according to People magazine. But then, footage from TMZ apparently showed him walking around an airport in Miami in the afternoon, confirming that he wasn't on the flight to Antigua, with eyewitnesses telling the outlet that Diddy and some other people got stopped by the feds, who then seized his phones, according to NBC. Though TMZ adds that sources with direct knowledge said he's not under arrest at this point. And as of right now, it's all but certain that these raids are about the sexual trafficking and assault lawsuits filed against Combs in recent months. With, however, local cops arresting a 25-year-old man accused of being Diddy's drug mule on cocaine and marijuana possession charges. With NBC reporting that three women and a man had been interviewed by federal officials in Manhattan as of yesterday. And this before three other scheduled interviews as well. Right, and all of it relating to allegations of sex trafficking, sexual assault, and the solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms. But also, like, if you haven't kept up with this story, it's important to understand just how high the heights were that Diddy has fallen from. Right, he's a three-time Grammy winner who built one of the biggest music empires in the last 3 decades. Starting Bad Boy Records, a fashion line, a television channel, working with names including Notorious B.I.G., Mary J. Blige, Usher, Lil' Kim, and Faith Evans. And even as recently as last year, he was still such a huge, highly regarded star, being honored at the MTV VMAs and seeing his last album get nominated for Best Progressive R&B Album at this year's Grammy Awards. But then everything went downhill in November, with Diddy's ex-girlfriend and R&B singer Cassie Ventura suing him for years of sexual abuse, including rape, alleging that he brought her into his, quote, ostentatious, fast-paced, and drug-fueled lifestyle soon after she met him and signed to his label in 2005 when she was 19 and he was 37, and saying then, after they began their on-and-off relationship in 2007, a pattern of abuse emerged, with Combs allegedly punching, kicking, and stomping her during fits of uncontrollable rage, as well as allegedly plying her with drugs and forcing her to have sex with other men while he masturbated and filmed them. And as she was trying to end the relationship in 2018, Diddy allegedly forced her into her home and raped her. And while that lawsuit was settled quick, literally the day after it was filed, a week later, two more women came forward with their own, with the first First, Joy Dickerson, saying she was a 19-year-old college student in 1991 when she met Diddy, claiming he drugged her, brought her home, and sexually assaulted her, allegedly even videotaping the assault, and later sharing it with several friends in the music industry. And she says that public exposure sent her into a tailspin, contributing to severe depression that landed her in the hospital and forced her to drop out of college. And then, as far as the other woman, she claims that around the same time, Diddy and the R&B singer Aaron Hall assaulted her and her roommate in Hall's home, with Diddy allegedly showing up irate at their home days later to stop them from speaking out, and then choking the woman until she passed out. And then after that, a fourth woman came forward in December, claiming that 2 decades ago, when she was 17 years old, a music exec flew her to a recording studio in New York, where she was given drugs and alcohol and then gang raped by Diddy and 2 other men, with a lawsuit including photos of the woman sitting on Diddy's lap that she said were taken the night in question. And then after that, in February, Rodney Lil Rod Jones, Diddy's former producer and videographer, he alleged that in the last couple of years, Diddy sexually harassed, drugged, and threatened him, describing how he was the victim of constant, unsolicited, and unauthorized groping and touching of his anus, and saying that as Diddy's videographer, he was required to constantly record him. So as a result, he claims to have gathered hundreds of hours of video and audio of Diddy himself, his staff, and his guests engaging in serious illegal activity, including footage of Diddy providing laced alcoholic beverages to minors and sex workers at his home. Now, of course, with this, Diddy has passionately denied all these allegations. But with so many different people all coming out with all these different forms of evidence, and now these raids on his homes, it's not looking good for him. But as we wait to see what all we learn from this, what all comes from this, I'm gonna pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts here? And then, you know, we just keep learning more and more about the horrific and twisted abuse from Ruby Frankie. Right, we've talked about this case in the past. She was best known for her family channel, 8 Passengers. And earlier this year, she was sentenced to 4 to 30 years in prison for child abuse, as well as counselor Jody Hildebrandt. And while everything we knew about the case was already incredibly disturbing, the Washington County Attorney's Office just released documents painting an incredibly horrible picture, including journal entries Ruby kept, with those entries detailing the abuse that she carried out, which I can't even talk about in detail on this channel because YouTube will suppress the video. But the way she wrote about the motives and her thinking about it alone was just wild. With a release from the county on the case explaining, religious extremism motivated Miss Frankie and Miss Hildebrandt to inflict this horrific abuse. The women appear to fully believe that the abuse they inflicted was necessary to teach the children how to properly repent for imagined sins and to cast the evil spirits out of their bodies. Right, in multiple entries, Ruby repeatedly said her son was either a demon or was possessed by one, sometimes saying he wants to serve the devil. Also writing in one entry, I told R he emulates a snake. He slithers and sneaks around looking for opportunities when no one is watching, and there he scurries. If he wants to emulate the savior, he needs to be 100% obedient. And in another entry, she said it was a big day for evil as she accused her daughter of manipulating her and then detailing instances of abuse, later calling her children selfish liars who do not understand God's love for them. And it's worth noting, there are dozens of pages of these entries, much of it's redacted, so this is really just a glimpse of what was going on. But from what we can actually see here, it is just disturbing beyond belief. And remember, we kind of touched on her motives back when she was sentenced, because at the time she said, I believe dark was light and right was wrong. I would do anything in this world for you. I took from you all that was soft and safe and good. And as you can probably imagine, the impact that this has had on the kids is just massive, with the county's release also saying they, quote, came to believe that they deserved the abuse. But as for where things stand now, Utah Board of Pardons and Parole, they're overseeing the sentencing for Jody and Ruby. And honestly, the details that keep coming out from this, it just makes me feel like the longer, the better. And then,
you know, it's sad to say, but I think too many of us took a foreign language in high school that we possibly were decent at until graduation. I mean, the truth is, the best way to learn another language is through immersion, right? Living where the language is spoken and practicing it daily. That's also easier said than done. Thing is, there's a second best way, and seriously, it's with Babbel. So muchas gracias, Babbel, for being a great partner of the PDS. You know, I'm hearing from people I know how different this is from when we were in school. That's because Babbel focuses on teaching you modern conversations that you can use in the real world. And personally, I think it helps that they use native speakers, not computers, and I enjoy that sound when I get it right. So don't pay hundreds of dollars for a private tutor. Babbel's known for helping you learn a new language in as little as 3 weeks with quick 10-minute lessons designed by over 200 language experts. Hell, one study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for you guys. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/DeFranco. Yeah, get 55% off at babbel.com/DeFranco, spelled BABBEL.com/DeFranco. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And then, when people start talking about, like, this is alpha behavior and this is beta behavior, it's hard for me not to just like sigh and roll my eyes, but I do find myself nodding in agreement when I've seen people saying there is nothing more beta than paying $18,000 for another grown man to berate you for not being alpha enough. Because that's what critics are saying about this 3-day course that's been dubbed the Alpha Male Boot Camp online, with a video popping up and going viral on X yesterday showing an instructor of the so-called Modern Day Night Project ripping these men to shreds.
More than 60% will not be here Friday, I guarantee it, and I'll make sure, because I see in your eyes that most of you don't belong here, and I'll be damned, I'll take this fucking knife off my fucking waist and carve this fucking tattoo off my fucking hand before I let any of you show up here on Friday for the graduation.
And believe it or not, the program bills itself as a 75-hour personal growth experience that helps, quote, men who want to live a life filled with fulfillment, purpose, financial freedom, and have a deep, loving relationship with their family. And adding that it'll be one of the toughest physical and mental challenges any participant will have ever experienced, costing $18,000 to join. But judging from the videos that we've seen, it looks more like just verbal and physical abuse than a self-help course. Right in one, you see men crawling slowly up a hill, with one getting yanked back down by his ankles. In another, they do exercises while getting sprayed with water hoses and told how fat and disappointing they are.
So if any of you get out of the water and ring the bell, I'm gonna personally whoop your ass on the sand.
Though honestly, the most disappointing thing about the men in these videos is that they paid money for this to happen to them.
Like, guys, have a regular midlife crisis and decide you all of a sudden want to run a marathon, or you want to make hiking half your personality. Like, genuinely, what I saw on that video, it would make more sense to me if you told me, oh, this is because they have a kink. It sexually excites them to be degraded and humiliated. Like, the fact that you haven't struggled and you lack adversity to the point that you would pay a man $18,000 to do this, that is being publicly shared online and you're just being humiliated. It's just so weird and stupid. And again, I'd get it more if it was a kink. This is a special level of pathetic. And then Elon Musk just took a big ol' L. And it's all thanks to U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer, with Breyer issuing a decision yesterday to throw out X's lawsuit against a research group that documented an uptick in hate speech on the platform, and writing in his decision that the suit was unabashedly and vociferously about punishing the defendants for their speech, which isn't the best look for Elon Musk, who claims to be a champion of free speech. Whereas the organization that Musk sued is called the Center for Countering Digital Hate, and they released a report last year showing that Twitter fails to act on 99% of racist, homophobic, neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic, and conspiracy content from the site's paid users. Right, and this came less than a year after Musk took over the site, after which he eliminated positions responsible for monitoring hate speech on the platform, gave anyone, including previously banned accounts, the option to pay for a blue checkmark and have their posts boosted, and Musk himself shared an anti-Semitic post. And as you might remember, that basically led to major corporations like Walmart, Apple, and Disney to stop advertising on the platform. And that is when Musk decided to sue, with X arguing in its case that the Center for Countering Digital Hate collected data from the site without the company's permission, leading to millions of dollars in lost advertising revenue. Now, with that, the center says that it was only accessing publicly available information, and in Bayer's decision, he essentially said that the point was moot anyways, writing, one, it is just not true that the complaint is only about data collection, and adding, two, that it is, quote, impossible to read the complaint and not conclude that X Corp is far more concerned about the center's speech than it is its data collection methods. And so, of course, with this, we've seen the center celebrating the decision online, writing in one post that Judge Breyer's dismissal sends a strong message to those who aim at intimidating independent research, and on the other side, X saying in a statement that it disagrees with the court's decision and plans to appeal. I know Musk himself hasn't commented publicly as of recording this. It is pretty interesting to see how he's answered questions about the case in the past, reportedly responding to an email from NPR last month by saying, "Your org is not on X, therefore doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned." Right, in general, this lawsuit, not the best look for a guy who loves to talk about free speech.
Free speech.
Freedom of speech.
We must protect free speech.
Free speech is meaningless unless you're allowed people you don't like to say things you don't like.
Right, and this lawsuit is just one of now many examples. I mean, even all the way back in 2022, he suspended accounts of several journalists who covered Musk's takeover of Twitter. And in addition to the lawsuit we're talking about here, he's also suing another group which found that ads appeared next to anti-Semitic content. And then more recently, you have the Don Lemon situation, where one, you had Musk being accused of canceling Lemon's X deal because he didn't like how his interview went. But I think that move by Musk in general just showed that he was a hypocrite and thin-skinned. But more specifically to what we're talking about today, in that interview, Lemon asked Musk about the apparent hypocrisy of saying companies were attacking free speech by pulling ads from X, and he struggled to respond.
If they're going to force censorship on the company before advertising, then obviously I find that unacceptable.
You find it unacceptable. Why is that not a form of free speech? They are free to advertise where they want. They're not beholden to, they're not obligated to advertise.
They're not obligated.
On X.com.
Right.
So how is that not free speech?
That's whereas the other platforms will censor on behalf of advertisers, the X platform will not.
I
have to say, Choose your question carefully. There's 5 minutes left.
And ultimately, what we're seeing here is, you know, Musk's long-held claims that he's a free speech absolutist, they've been long questioned. It's just now that we also have in writing from a judge that those claims really don't have a leg to stand on. And then, so away from all the politics and the drama of that new government spending package we talked about yesterday, there's actually something missing from that bill that could potentially impact the lives of millions of Americans. And that's money for a little-known initiative called the Affordable Connectivity Program, or the ACP, which simply helps low-income families and other eligible recipients get up to $75 off their monthly internet bill. Right, because the ACP actually came about as part of the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law, and surveys show that it is overwhelmingly popular with both political parties. And in fact, a bipartisan group of Senate and House lawmakers have already written the legislation to save the ACP, though the most vocal support of the program in the past few days has come primarily from Democrats. But in any case, ACP funding has just not moved forward, and so as a result, the FCC has been forced to start shutting down the program, halting new signups and warning users that their benefits are about to be suspended. And according to the FCC, this will affect more than 23 million American households who will now be at risk of being kicked off their internet plans or having to pay hundreds of dollars more per year to stay online. And with this, you had places like CNN speaking to ACP beneficiaries who say they might have to forego food or pick up extra shifts at their second job just to pay their internet bill. And that's of course because, as we know, internet access has become an absolutely vital part of most people's lives. And that report going on to explain how losing internet access can affect people's ability to just do schoolwork, to find and do their jobs, to access medical services, and saying this is widening the digital divide between have and have-nots and potentially leading to economic instability on a massive scale. We actually have some numbers that show in clear terms just how important this program is, with one survey finding that as many as 65% of respondents fear losing their job without the ACP, 75% worrying about losing online healthcare services, and more than 80% believe their kids would fall behind in school. And this is Gigi San, a former top FCC official, saying, "It's embarrassing that a popular bipartisan program with support from nearly half of Congress will end because of politics, not policy." And to that point, it's worth noting that there is growing evidence that the ACP is good policy in a strictly economic sense, as studies have indicated that the program may ultimately save taxpayers' money, increase GDP, and reduce healthcare spending. And unfortunately, this may be yet another example of all that chaos in Congress, it having very, very real consequences for real everyday Americans. And it's often in ways we don't see or think about. And then, spring is here, y'all, and when it comes to the weather this time of year, the one thing you can count on is uncertainty. Surprises. With spring break in full swing, no one wants to worry about surprise weather, whether you're traveling or you're just hitting up activities where you live. So embrace all weather conditions with our fantastic partner, Vessi, and a pair of their waterproof sneakers. Vessi's technology ensures you stay cool, comfortable, and stylish from city walks to beach escapes. For example, the Vessi Stormburst low tops have a grippy sole and a customized fit with removable insoles for arch support, allowing you to swap or adjust for maximum comfort, and pull tabs for quick, hassle-free shoe slipping. They're ideal for outdoor activities without weather worry, knowing that your feet will stay dry and comfortable. Plus, they're great-looking shoes that take you from day to night with ease. Oh yeah, and I almost forgot. Don't forget to check out Vessi's Astoria backpack. Super sleek in its design and waterproof with secure zippers and a 16-inch laptop sleeve. So what are you waiting for? Find the perfect blend of style and practicality in shoes at Vessi.com/PDS. You'll even get 15% off your first order. It's Vessi.com/PDS. And then,
yo, tech companies are slurping up so much electricity that U.S. power grids might actually run dry. That's a warning we're getting right now from a new report. But also, before we get there, it might help to understand the World Wide Web.
You're going surfing on the internet.
Because when you open up your phone or your computer to watch, you know, this stupid show every day around 3 p.m. Pacific when Phil's actually almost on time, it, I don't know for you, but at least for me, it still feels kind of magical. Now, granted, part of this is my glowing aura, my natural magnetism, of course. But mostly, it's the way that the internet feels like something ethereal, something out there in another dimension, not physical. Which makes sense, because, you know, there's no one thing you can point to and say, that's the internet. But also, that's kind of deceptive. Right? Because for every website you visit, every program you download, every file that you upload, there is a corresponding piece of hardware somewhere out there in the world for it. And it's probably in a data center, or one of those scary looking rooms full of shelves stacked with electronics, giant fans, braided wires snaking through everything, which, you know, contain the servers, hard drives, and network equipment that make the digital age possible. And all of that, of course, has to hook up to the power grid, a huge network of power stations and transmission lines that carry their electricity to consumers around the country. But of course, there's only so much power to actually go around. And those data centers, there is some power-hungry motherfuckers. For example, in 2022, the 2,700 data centers in the U.S. sucked out more than 4% of all the country's electricity. And the International Energy Agency projects that by 2026, they'll consume 6%. And that number is expected to just keep climbing and climbing in the following years. And this is tech companies like Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, and Microsoft dig their claws into real estate across the U.S. for their new facilities. And as for what's driving the increase in demand for power, I mean, there's actually many factors. Not least including the launch of 5G, companies outsourcing IT functions to the cloud, and the general digitization collection of data as the world moves away from old filing cabinets. And then you throw in there the explosion of crypto mining operations, which are insanely energy intensive. Now, more recently, the revolution in artificial intelligence, which not only feed into the massive growth of cloud computing, but also require large warehouses of computer infrastructure that consume exponentially more power than traditional data centers. Now, to be clear here, all these developments would have been fine if the grid simply kept up by expanding supply. But that didn't happen. In fact, it looks like utility planners were caught completely off guard, with North American projections of energy demand growth 5 years in the future nearly doubling in 2023 alone, spiking from 2.6 to 4.7%. That's according to the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. And this is construction of new transmission lines has slowed to a snail's pace since a decade ago. Right in the first half of the 2010s, the U.S. installed 1,700 miles of new high voltage lines per year on average. But then, during the second half of that decade, the number plummeted to just 645 miles per year. So as a result, new clean energy producers and other consumers of electricity are facing longer wait times for hookups to the grid. And this is more Americans are starting to rely on the grid instead of fossil fuels to power electric vehicles, heat pumps, induction stoves, and other electric appliances, meaning that the transition toward a renewable future is actually being slowed down by competition for scarce energy between tech firms and everyone else. And so with all that, what we're seeing now are a couple of different responses to the trend. Right? Some commercial customers who have the money for it have actually begun moving to get off the grid altogether, like Microsoft and Google, who are looking into building their own small-scale on-site nuclear power plants. Though also to do that, they'll have to climb over several hurdles, from designing the tech to acquiring the land to getting regulatory approval. But more often, you're seeing things like customers scouring the grid for any leftover hookups that haven't been snatched by competitors yet. Because usually, tech firms put their data centers in areas with major internet infrastructure, a large pool of talent, and attractive government incentives. Or in other words, big cities. But as those traditional hotspots get overcrowded, we're seeing tech giants descend onto smaller communities instead, with places like Columbus, Ohio, Altoona, Iowa, and Fort Wayne, Indiana getting flooded by hookup requests from data center developers. With the Washington Post even reporting that some of those second-choice markets are already running low on energy supply, leading developers to venture even further out, even into cornfields in some cases, according to a real estate firm that serves the industry. So now we're seeing officials in states that initially lured these tech firms in with incentives beginning to regret that decision. Though of course this as power companies and landowners have been popping champagne to all of this. Like for example, Georgia, where projections of new electricity use for the next decade are 17 times what they were only recently, with the state's major power company pointing to data centers as the main culprit. Or in Arizona, you have the largest utility there projecting that it will be out of transmission capacity before the end of the decade absent any major upgrades. Or how in Northern Virginia, there's a 30 square mile patch of land that's been dubbed Data Center Alley. Not to mention Texas, which already suffers from chronic power shortages during the summer, with the consulting firm McKinsey estimating that the energy needed for crypto operations aiming to hook up to the grid would swallow a quarter of the state's electricity at peak demand. Now, of course, with this, the one obvious solution is just upgrade the U.S. energy grid. Except it becomes less obvious because the question is, who will pay for those upgrades? Or because assuming the government doesn't, though of course many think that it should, the cost of new infrastructure goes to the utilities first, but then they pass it off to consumers in the form of rate hikes. Also, it's not obvious exactly who should provide the new energy. Right on one side, you have the Biden White House pushing to fill in the gap with clean renewables. But then on the other side, you have fossil fuel companies lobbying to keep their plants online and even build more. Right? I mean, already we've seen delayed coal plant closures in Kansas, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Indiana, Tennessee, New Mexico, and South Carolina. All because demand is going up. And until we see bigger investments in clean energy, we can't just shut off the dirty kind for regular folk. Right? And as for the White House, right, Biden can't make it happen with a snap of his fingers. Right? Building transmission infrastructure requires huge land acquisitions, environmental reviews, and negotiations to determine how the costs are distributed. And even if we get to work shoring up energy supply right now, it'll take a while to catch up to the demand. Right, reportedly, it may take 4 years or more to bring new power generation online and build transmission between regions. Whereas for utilities connecting new customers to the grid, that could take only 1 or 2 years. And so for now, we just have to kind of cross our fingers and hope that the grids operating with lower backup energy reserves don't buckle. Because all it takes is one intense heat wave or a hurricane and your power goes out when you need it most. Which, you know, is what we saw with a 2021 winter storm in Texas that killed not only the power, but nearly 250 Texans. And of course, I know it's not lost on you that the extreme weather events that are putting strains on our grids are becoming more frequent as the climate changes, which can only be stopped if we make our grids green. But that is where we're going to end this dive today. And while we wait to see what happens, of course, I'd love to know your thoughts, your opinions, and your reactions down below.
And then finally, today we have the Yesterday Today segment where we dive into the comments of yesterday's show and see what y'all had to say. And we'll start with the fact that so many of the comments were just about me not being in my tiny little dungeon. Ellie saying, someone alerted the SCP Foundation, Philip DeFranco has escaped containment. Orion saying, Phil's outside, my world's been thrown completely upside down. With Smokey adding, and now he's in bed with us. Whatever, I'm lonely. Never seen him touch grass before. It's a first for me. Which I will say, it was nice to see the sun outside before 3 p.m. Because you might have been able to tell today, the issue wasn't a wind. It was just these damn birds, though I feel like I can't get angry because I'm in their home. Also, I'll say I noticed there's a lot of love on and off YouTube about us doing that long COVID segment. Many people who have been dealing with saying they feel seen. Also, people like AAGC sharing. A close friend of mine used to be the chief of EMS services for 25 years. He was 5 years from retirement when he got long COVID and it forced him to retire early. Every day he deals with migraines and fatigue like nothing he's ever experienced before, and yet his boss told him to stop making his symptoms up to get out out of work. It should really tell you the state of healthcare that you can be the chief of emergency medicine, yet when you get caught up at a well-documented mass disabling event, you still get called a liar and your pension gets stripped. It's infuriating because all any of his coworkers would say when he talked about it was, quote, are you sure it's COVID? Are you sure it's not the vaccine? Like, you work in medicine, yet you're willing to believe a vaccine could do that to somebody over a freaking virus. And really, there was no shortage of people sharing their own experiences. Like, all of those stories y'all shared could be a video on its own. And the reactions seemed to range from maybe it's all in your head to people sharing things like, I was lucky I had a team of doctors trying to play whack-a-mole with what the body was reacting to, but saying the answer they all had for me was mostly the same, we don't know. And people sharing their slow progress, how one day they went from walking 7 kilometers a day to being housebound, and saying after 4 years they finally got into a place where they can stay awake to work 8 hours, saying they're now up to 1,000 steps a day, up from days where they'd have 30. There were also a lot of people that talked about YouTubers like Diana Cowern, aka Physics Girl, noting that she's been suffering from CFS brought on by COVID since July of 2022, how she's been in a state of constant dependency on her husband and family, and how heart-wrenching it's been. But that is where today's show is going to end. As always, thank you for being a part of these. And remember, not to worry, because you're not going to have to miss me too much, because my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, this babe, meet you every day. You light my oxygen.